Okay, folks, thank you very much indeed for joining us today. This is the Porkmeister, and this, of course, is Planet Porky, to which you are listening, Leslie Ann Jones, alongside me in the rather smart studios we use these days in Fitzrovia. Fitzrovia is a really nice part of London, is it not, Leslie Ann?
It's very, very nice indeed, yeah.
Exactly.
I hadn't been around here for quite a long time.
Yeah.
I used to work across the road in Capital Radio.
Yes.
Years and years ago.
Yes.
So I was up and down Tottenham Court Road in,
oh, that's right,
in the
yeah.
old days.
Yeah, I remember when it was up here. Yeah,
but
that's
it's
right.
It's very
yeah.
pleasant now.
Oh, it's lovely. Guy Ritchie lives around here. I think
yeah,
I mentioned
he does.
That before. And,
quite near that nice pub we went to where we
that's
had
right.
Thai curry.
Thai curry, yes, it was very nice indeed. That's called the Grafton.
What a good pub.
It's called the Grafton. It's in a road called Grafton Walk. And it has a resonance with me because when I was a kid growing up in Chester, on Saturdays we'd get over to Liverpool, you know, because they had bigger nightclubs and there were more women there. And it was exciting, you know, to be on Merseyside, you know what I mean? And to act like a Scouser and talk like a Scouser, even though we were actually quite posh because we came from the King's School Chester, you know what I mean? But the place to go...
You're slumming it.
Well, so we felt a bit superior because, you know, we were sort of public school boys going over to across the water, as you would say, because you go across from Birkenhead to Liverpool on the ferry. And one of the places we did go was the Grafton Rooms, because that was great. There was another one called the Pyramid. You know, sensational nights. The only problem, of course, was getting home, because...
Well, what time the last ferry go?
Well, last ferry go about midnight or something like that.
Oh, you're
but
stuffed.
But then you're in Birkenhead, and then you've got to get home from Birkenhead, you know. So, normally speaking, it would be through the night, and we'd wait for the first train at 6 or 7 o'clock the following morning, you know. And if you got lucky, you always found somewhere to stay. You know what I mean,
know
Leslie
what
Ann?
You mean.
Know what I mean, yeah, absolutely. But anyway, that's that. Now, look, I'll tell you what I want to talk to you about, because it's a worldwide phenomenon. I've just been sent a new book on Mr. Zuckerberg, and lots of people send me books to review. I don't get round to reading all of them, but this is a really fascinating book. It's just called Facebook, The Inside Story. But my goodness, what it reveals about Mark Zuckerberg is, you know, that actually all of us are odd in our own ways. It's just when you become famous, people find your oddities fascinating. You know what I mean? Like Howard Hughes, the world's first billionaire, you know, American billionaire.
Oh, he was worse than you with his... He used to put tissues down on his carpet
he did,
before
yeah.
he walked on them in his
He used
his
to wear
slippers.
Tissue boxes on his feet.
That's right, he did,
He would not wear socks or anything.
Yeah.
He'd wear tissue boxes on his feet. He wouldn't cut his nails
obsessed
because...
Obsessed with germs, wasn't he?
Obsessed with germs. He had nails that were sort of 6 or 7 inches long.
Yeah.
He wouldn't let people into his house sometimes. He was the first guy who worked out that if you put people in boiler suits or, you know, those white space suits, they can't, you know, pass their germs onto you and all that kind of stuff. But of course, none of that would have come out and would have seemed extraordinary if it wasn't Howard Hughes. It's because
exactly.
he was Howard Hughes,
mm-hmm.
you know. And you know, Brian Wilson, the genius who wrote most of the Beach Boys songs, who did his own head in with acid, didn't he?
Some sort of drugs, yeah.
Disergic acid dilaminothide is LSD, that's right. And I think he took so much of it that, he spent years trying to get his head back together, but he could only write music when he put his feet in the sand pit, which he had installed into his home in Malibu, because when he was playing the piano, he felt better with sand between his toes, you know.
And, now, I get this, because
yeah.
I have certain little rituals that I do when I'm
right.
writing.
Yeah, go on then.
Obviously, I'm not a superstar, but,
yeah.
you know, working on it.
Yeah.
So, for example, I often get asked in interviews,
yeah.
do you get writer's block?
Yeah.
Well, you know, professional writers, we can't afford to get writer's block, can we?
No.
But I have a little routine where I actually get ready for work.
Right.
I've got an office in my house.
Yes.
But I do get up and get dressed, get washed and dressed.
Yeah.
And I get ready for work.
Oh, I do that every morning.
I do that every morning.
I'm like you. I've got an office at home.
Mm.
And I don't really like working at home. I like you. I like to go out all the time. And I like you, every morning, I get up, I shower, I get dressed, and then I get to work.
Get ready for work.
My days fall into two parts. Sometimes I'm out very early if I'm doing television or something like that. A car might come for me at 6 o'clock. and I can be home by 2 or 3 o'clock. Or sometimes I get all what I call the drivel out the way in the morning to get out for a job at 2 o'clock. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I prefer to get it done early and come home, not the other way around.
So here's a tip. And right. Some people might say this was eccentric, but it's one for you to try.
Yes.
If I get stuck, I go back into my bedroom and I put red lipstick on.
Ah, good.
Now, when do you ever see me in red lipstick?
Never.
No. But yeah. I keep a tube of red lipstick.
Right.
And if I'm stuck on a sentence or on a paragraph something,
yes.
I go and put the red lipstick on, come back to my desk,
yes.
And suddenly I'm somebody else.
Yes.
And it calms.
Very good. Well done.
So there's one for you to try.
That's one for me to try. Talking about lipstick, by the way, I read only this morning about this latest fashion craze in the Far East, and of course, we've got to take in consideration the coronavirus and like the coronavirus. But this latest fashion craze with models is they're only a perfect model now in the eyes of a lot of the fashion houses if they can take a stick of lipstick and balance it on their collarbone while they're standing up.
What?
That's how thin their body's got to be.
I bet I couldn't do that.
Yeah. They've got to balance it on their collarbone and it's got to stand up straight. This is the test now. And unless you're not the perfect shape to be a model.
There's no way I could do that.
Yeah, well, no way anybody could do it unless you're deformed.
They're not going to employ us as models, are they?
No.
Really? They should, though, because we are representative of your normal man and woman in the street.
Nobody cares about the normal man and woman in the street.
Well, we care.
They want the beautiful people, you know. I've often been allied to the beautiful people, but never quite.
Don't you think
there.
Yeah. Models tend to me to look a bit like freaks these days.
Depends what sort of model. I mean, the heroin chic thing was disgraceful,
wasn't
it? Lots
of them are quite ugly, aren't they?
Because, I agree. But anyway, getting back to... So what would I say are my abnormalities? Well, for instance, I've got indoor and outdoor clothes. When I get home, if I've been out I immediately change into other clothes.
Yeah, I do that.
Which people find odd. You know, I'm a male. Not a lot of males do that.
Put a tracksuit on or something like that?
Not a tracksuit. I don't like tracksuits. I think trackies are awful. I will probably put on a short sleeve shirt and a pair of shorts or something like that. You know what I mean?
What, nice Bermudas.
Yes, that's right.
Turquoise and orange.
Yeah, yes. Well, not turquoise and orange. They're all blue. Everything
with
I have
lace
is blue.
Trim.
No, not with a lace trim. No. But I have. I have, you know, outdoor apparel and indoor apparel. Nobody gets into my house with their shoes on from the outside, all that kind of stuff.
That's
you know.
A no-no.
But other odd things, like, for instance, what are the other things I do? Well, I don't know, but people would find them odd if they looked at me and thought, you know, what's that and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, so Mr. Zuckerberg, you know, this is a fascinating book because it shows the mind of a genius.
Somebody else has written this or it's his autobiography?
It's the inside story by Stephen Levy, but he's had some assistance from Zuckerberg.
Because Mark must have told this guy his...
Yeah.
Predilections
for
him to know.
Yeah, he has.
I mean, so he wants us to know them, in other words.
Yes, he does, but he didn't want to write it himself, you know.
It's
for instance.
Like hard work.
Yeah, Facebook's logo is blue because Mark Zuckerberg is colorblind and can't distinguish the colors red and green.
Ooh.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah. Zuckerberg has a phobia of all illegal drugs and he connects that for some reason with the fact that he hates needles. So hating needles means he hates drugs and always has done. As Facebook's popularity skyrocketed in 2005, its servers got so hot that staff had to buy the entire supply of fans from a local supermarket to cool the operations room down, or it might have blown up.
That's an interesting factoid.
Absolutely. Zuckerberg sweats so much, you might have seen this, it was taken out as a separate story last week. Excuse me. Zuckerberg sweats so much before public speaking events, an employee is employed to blow dry his armpits. Yeah?
Yeah, you know you're rich when you've got a personal armpit blower.
Yes, absolutely. He wears the same grey T-shirt every day of his life.
The same one?
No, it's the same make.
Okay, so he's got dozens of these things.
He's got hundreds of them.
But it's the same style of one.
They cost $325 each, okay?
Each,
$325 each. He wears the same grey T-shirts every day. They cost $325
How
each.
How can a T-shirt cost that much?
Well, it must be a very good T-shirt. And the reason he does that is because he... can't be bothered going through his wardrobe and looking for something to wear
each
day.
There's a lot to be said for that.
And he can't be bothered to spend any of his brain power that day on deciding what to wear. So he wears the same thing every day.
I get it, because I have a uniform too.
Which I think is quite good,
yeah,
don't
no,
you?
No, I have a uniform. So all my clothes, you will have seen me wearing nothing but black or denim, right?
Yes.
Today I'm in black and denim. But I have, what, 20 pairs of jeans, 15 pairs of the same Joseph black trousers.
20 pairs of jeans,
I must have 25 black silk shirts.
Right.
And I never have to worry about what to wear. Because I just always go in the wardrobe.
Yes.
Walk-in wardrobe. There's all the black shirts. There's all the black trousers. There's all the jeans. Pick, pick, pick.
Right.
And it does simplify your life.
Yeah, simplifies your life.
So I'm with him on that.
Yeah, okay. I think the other guy used to do that was George Michael, wasn't it? Didn't George Michael always only ever wear a black T-shirt?
Yeah, he did. You saw him in white Catherine Hamlet T-shirts quite a lot in the early days.
Well, I remember Piers did a piece when Piers was writing the Bizarre column, and he actually pointed out, and George Michael sent him, you know, like a T-shirt or something, as a thought it was very funny that
just
he'd noticed, and yeah, and said, you know, start the craze for T-shirts.
No, I'm a great admirer of uniform. I think it takes the pressure off.
How about this one? David Cho, C-H-O-E. Was a little-known graffiti artist. You've got to remember that Zuckerberg started his business, which is now worth like 80 billion quid.
In his student bedroom.
In his student bedsit. Yeah. That's right, in his student bedsit. That's right, yeah, that was his first office, okay. So David Cho, a little-known graffiti artist, was commissioned to paint a mural in Facebook's first HQ, which is in fact a rented house. Santa Paula or something like that?
Wherever.
Just
it
outside
is.
San Francisco, you know, it is, yeah. But it's a rented house, right? They didn't have enough cash flow money because they were still trying to develop, you know, the actual product itself. So they offered him stock options. And because he knew they didn't have any money, he thought, well, why not? He took them, okay? So he had no idea what they were doing or what was going to become of it. He took the stock options. His shares are now valued at $200 million.
Wow.
$200 million for painting a mural
on
the outside of the offices.
Which, are you allowed to do that if you're renting a property?
Well, he must have had permission, presumably, from the, you know, often when you rent stuff, if you say, I will decorate but improve it, that's one way of doing it, because I have a bit of property myself. Or you can agree that they return it to its original state when they leave, if it's a long-term lease.
Okay.
If it's 5 years or something like that, you know what I mean?
But you're not on Facebook, are you?
No, I'm not, no.
Now, why do you resist?
Well, I think I've been on Twitter for a long time. Twitter can get you into trouble. You can be erratic, you know, and make harsh comments sometimes, which I've been guilty of and apologise for. But Facebook, for me, was always more girly than the men, if you see what I mean. I always thought it was. And also, I don't need two social media profiles. I'd rather just have the one. And I think Twitter's more direct. This week, I've made pronouncements on things like coronavirus, you know, don't give in on it. I made pronouncements the last week on the James Bond film being cancelled because of coronavirus.
How silly is that, by the way?
And I said, why, James Bond's supposed to be a tough guy. Don't
exactly.
give in.
Exactly. And there is something to be said for carrying on
regardless. Yeah, exactly.
Carrying on is normal.
Yeah.
You know, we mustn't let this thing take us down.
Yeah.
And the only way we can make that happen is to keep doing what we normally do.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Keep going on holiday.
I totally agree.
You know, keep going to work.
Yes.
Keep taking your kids to school. Kids aren't going to get it anyway.
I totally agree. I made pronouncements on Priti Patel, saying that I was on her side rather than the civil servants. She's a girl from Watford Grammar School, up against the establishment, guys who are all called Sir something or other, who all went to Eton and Oxford or Cambridge.
And you know why they're throwing their toys out the pram?
Yes.
Because she is exposing them.
Of course she is.
The whole construct is going to come tumbling
down. Of course she is. The guy Rudman, I think his name is, the chief civil service guy, you know, head of the civil service at the Home Office, allegedly, according to one newspaper report, told colleagues she was too thick to be Home Secretary. It's an allegation, but it's part of, you know, the grist of the mill of the relationships between the two of them. What do you expect a woman who is Home Secretary and trying to establish her authority to do if those sort of rumours were getting back to her ears?
And also, if a woman shouts at somebody, that's considered to be bullying.
Yes, that's right.
If a male boss shouts at us, and we've both had those, the same ones in certain cases, you know, we just have to put up with it.
Yeah, exactly.
Because
that's
a mercurial editor.
Absolutely.
So, sorry, no, I'm on her side.
Yeah, I'm very much on her side. One other thing about Zuckerberg, who is, you know, so fabulously wealthy now, he's sort of lost count, but
he's still ugly, though.
It's billions. Well, I wouldn't, you see, I'd never get around down to saying people are ugly and all that kind of stuff.
Well, he's not my type then.
Well, he's not your type, but
he looks like a tortoise.
Well, funny you should say
he's
that.
He's lost
but
weight.
It says the guy writing this book was talking to him, okay? And he says he has this habit of stopping speaking and staring at you in the most unsettling sort of a way. He said later that it sometimes happens when he's in intense thought and he goes into a trance-like silence. Time seemed to freeze. Apparently, anybody who knows Zuckerberg is well, knows Zuckerberg well, is very familiar with this alarming habit. Sometimes the silences can last minutes. Excuse me. Where it appears that he's just been put into suspended animation. His eyes bulge. He doesn't say anything. He has an intense look on his face and nobody knows what's going on.
Told you, tortoise.
Well, even after years of media training, which Mr. Zuckerberg's had, he's now 35, he's not a beguiling social prospect. That's the...
He's married, isn't he? He's got a Chinese wife,
I think.
That's
right, yeah. An Oriental
wife,
yeah.
She must have seen beyond. Yeah. She must have noticed. Well, his brain obviously works 19 to the dozen.
Yes.
And, we all have to pause. We can only do one thing at a time, really. We all like to think we multitask.
Yeah, that's right,
you can actually only do one specific thing at any given moment.
Yeah.
And he is doing those things at a pace of 1,000 times ahead of the rest of us.
Yes.
So, of course, his brain is going to freeze.
Okay.
I understand that.
Okay. Now, coming to the... Just to finish up with Mr. Zuckerberg, the founding of his company, he had a relationship with a lady at Harvard, okay? Very bright guy, obviously, but he copped out once he founded Facebook. I suppose you would, wouldn't you?
Why bother to graduate?
In a self-pitying fury after romantic rejection at Harvard, Zuckerberg used the coding knowledge that he had gained through, his trying to set this company up to build FaceMash. It was a website that allowed students to vote on the relative hotness of the girls at the university. Okay?
Oh, how sexist.
Yeah, it, of course it is. Well, it doesn't say girls, actually. It says to vote on the relative hotness of their peers.
Oh, well, okay.
So I think that...
Take
it
back.
I misled you there. Of their peers. So that's girls and boys, okay? But I suppose a lot of men will have used it to, give ladies marks out of 10. And hopefully vice versa,
sort of
okay?
Sort of pre-Tinder, isn't it?
That's right, absolutely. Its instant popularity got him into trouble with the Harvard authorities and the university's feminist society. So there was a touch of I was suggesting, okay? But it yielded a lesson. People are much more voyeuristic than I would have thought. I learnt that from the very start. That is the founding insight of Facebook. Later, when his firm ran into trouble, Zuckerberg would complain that its problems were the result of his naive idealism about human nature and how he had always believed people are basically good. But, Mr. Lee, the reviewer of this book that I got, who I went and looked up, said that, Zuckerberg's just a genius and actually what he says goes and what he does he wants and he just gets on with it.
There's a very sweet thing about, grandma, that this was a great story.
Yeah.
There was a grandma who advised her granddaughter when she was going off to college,
oh yeah,
date the nerds, because they're the ones who'll grow up to be the billionaires. So this got back to Zuckerberg. And his advice was, okay, women should not be aiming to gain power and status by marrying it.
Yeah.
They should be setting out to be it themselves. So he's actually a really good role model for girls as well.
I'm sure he is. Right, okay, folks, you are listening to Life on Planet Porky. Thank you very much indeed for joining us today, Leslie Ann. Some of your insights there onto dating nerds. I mean, have you ever dated a nerd?
Yeah.
Have you?
I married a nerd.
You married a nerd, my God.
Yeah.
That's a terrible confession, is it not?
It didn't last.
Now, talking about marrying, right? Tell her I asked that question. Well, I asked the question for a number of reasons. A lady here who set up a great business, and what she does is she goes around finding girlfriends for men who are rich, powerful, wealthy, and who can't be bothered to look for a girlfriend themselves,
God,
okay?
Not that again.
What do you mean again? Is this a popular...
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Right, here, I'll read this to you. In a discreet office in Mayfair, London, Olivia Rigg is explaining how she gets the measure of her male clients. Has an interior decorator done their home? She goes to these people's homes. They call her up and they say, look, I want you to find me a girlfriend. She says, right, I'll come to your home, because she has to weigh up what their background is and all that kind of stuff. So she says, I have to work out whether they've got an interior decorator done in the home. You can always tell. Do they have photos of family on the wall? How gracious are they to the waiters, you know, and the servants in their house? How do they behave on the tennis court? Do they have any manners when they're in competition? She calls herself a consultant. Wealthy men hire her to find them a girlfriend or a wife. The charge, the minimum charge, is £20,000 for 6 months. Okay?
So she's a madam by another name.
Well,
sorry.
Is she?
Yeah, of course. Because if a woman is setting out only to marry a rich guy, then what is she?
Right.
You know, there's not much love and kind of mutual attraction involved. It only matters that he's got a lot of money.
Yeah.
That's not a very nice girl.
Do you think it's an accepted norm that very wealthy men or powerful men or men like Aristotle and Nassus would, of course, take a mistress in any marriage?
Relationship. I mean, they do, and they expect to be able to because they are all powerful.
Yes.
They have all the money.
Yes.
And, you know, the wives tend to be a bit downtrodden.
Yeah.
I would not be that kind of wife.
No.
If my husband goes out and has an affair, off with his head.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, bye. See you later.
I remember seeing a biopic of Jackie Onassis.
Yeah.
And the day.
Onassis, even.
Onassis, that's it. Thank you. The day they got married. Aristotle, they went.
Shag somebody else.
That's right.
Yeah.
Who was Maria Callas, wasn't it? The opera singer.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think they went home from the wedding reception, and she thought they were then going to go out for dinner for another reception, you know, with another group of rich sort of friends and businessmen from all over the world.
Ha.
And he got changed. He got changed, and she said, "Where are you going, Harry?" And he said, "I'm going to see my mistress, of course."
He was in a bit of an hurry, wasn't he?
And he wasn't even, I mean, trying to hide it, you know, and that was it.
But it's disgraceful behaviour. There's no equality in a relationship like that.
Yeah.
That is not about love and affection.
Does it have to be about love and affection?
Isn't it
an arrangement?
Otherwise, it's a horrible arranged marriage, and the wife is there to be what? A trophy to make him look good, to produce his children, to give him a certain respectable dimension to his life, to make him look like something he isn't really.
What do you think about Melania Trump?
Well, what about her?
Well, I mean, what do you think about her role?
Not much to think about her, really,
No, there is, because, you see, that's you being a bit bitchy about another woman, because she's a very good-looking woman. Do you think she's good-looking?
She's not bad.
I think she's very good-looking.
Why do you always have this thing, Mike? I have to take you up on this.
Yeah.
You tend to judge women as being more worthwhile if they are beautiful.
They're more interesting to me.
Are they?
Not worthwhile. They're more interesting to me because
they're good looking than if they're not.
Say again.
Why is the good lookingness factor? Yeah. Why is that the defining thing about you?
Because my view is that a woman's greatest asset is what she looks like to the rest of the world.
That's terribly sexist.
Well, it might be sexist, but I'm afraid it's first impression situation. And first impression situation has been with us since the day that we evolved from being Neanderthals. Okay?
How can we ever have equality?
What are you doing? You're putting your hands on your head and screaming.
I'm not screaming. You know, did I scream?
Well,
listener,
You nearly did.
I absolutely didn't.
I'm only
How
telling
can we
you
that. Ever have equality in our world, in the 21st century, if women are still judged primarily on their looks. So what are we saying?
Hang on. Women judge men on their looks.
No, we don't.
Yes, you do. Why do you think Mark Zuckerberg gets a wife looking like that?
Yeah. Ari Onassis got a wife looking like that. He also got a mistress.
Yeah.
You know, what I'm trying to say is that lady with her dating club for millionaires, she's looking to match beautiful women to very rich men.
Yes.
So therefore, the whole thing is out of kilter before you start.
Yeah.
Because those rich guys are not going to be looking twice at a woman who's over 40, who looks like the back of a bus.
Yes.
She might be a very nice, very intelligent
person.
Sure,
she is, but men
don't
unless
she looks like a certain type, he's not going to be interested in her.
I'm,
so it's horrible.
No, I'm not disrespectful to women at all. You know, I have huge admiration for women's intelligence and their minds and their ability, and they do very well in business.
The most important thing about them is the way they look.
Well, it is to me, because
once they get over, 40, you discard them and get another one?
No, of course not.
That's what rock stars do.
No.
That is what rock stars do.
I'm only being very honest about the way that I see my interaction with the opposite sex.
So
I'm heterosexual.
You're never going to get a wife, are you?
Sorry?
You're never going to get a wife.
Well, I've given up on the For years, I used to, on the radio, tell people about the search for the first Mrs. Parry, the FMP, first
You've
Mrs.
Parry.
You've
given up on that now?
I've given up on that now because it would now be impractical.
Why is that then?
Well, because there's other things to do. But anyway, it's all you shouting at me.
I'm not trying
to be honest with
Am
you.
Am I shouting?
And talking about my relationship. But getting back to this lady, right,
yes.
This Olivia Rigg, not only does she charge $20,000 for the first 6 months.
She's having a laugh.
She has been offered, in addition to that, she's been offered £1 million success fee if a client ends up married within 12 months.
So does she want to find me a husband?
Or ends up making arrangements.
I'll never marry again. If she wanted to find me,
yeah.
No, let's give her a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want a billionaire, actually, not necessarily, but I would like to meet a genuine, nice man
yes.
who was going to be faithful to me.
Yes.
And we could enjoy the same interests,
right.
travel the world,
right.
and have a laugh together.
Yes.
Would that be too much to ask?
Well, I it's you that's asking, so
would she like to take me up on that? Shall I tell you what the answer would be?
Right.
That I'm over 40, so I'm too old. She's not looking to match somebody like
me. Well, you see, I think
those guys are going to want 29-year-old models.
I think you're being ageist against yourself.
Yeah.
Because I see great qualities in women of your age and older.
I've been single for 13 years.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to date me because I'm too old.
I wouldn't want to go out with a woman 20 years younger than me. A, I'd feel embarrassed in public, okay? I'm
well,
no oil painting these
granddaughter.
Days. Say again.
They might think she was.
Yeah, they
granddaughter.
Might. They might. I totally agree.
I should have said daughter.
Yeah, daughter or granddaughter. I totally agree with you. You know, when I go out with my niece now, I feel uncomfortable enough. My niece is 32 or something like that, right? You know, and she's great fun, by the way. So there's nothing coy about it. You know what I mean? It's Uncle Mike and niecey, and we have a few. We get into a wine bar, have a few drinks, and all that kind of stuff. But
and do you tell the staff? Do you go? This is my niece. Just so you know.
No, what I do, and if we're going to have dinner or something like that, I always say, right, my niece will order first to make it absolutely clear what the relationship
Fair
is.
Enough.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, I
or
get
Or could
that.
You get my niece another gin and tonic, please, or something
decent.
Like that, you know?
Yeah, I like
because
that.
Because I don't want people thinking under any circumstances that, you know, I'm some old bloke on the pull, because for any woman as good-looking as my niece to be with a guy as ugly as me, she'd have to be paid to do it.
She must be in it for the money.
Yeah, yeah.
But what hope is there when our role models, our Prime Minister, for example,
yes.
age 55,
yes.
is dating a woman 20, well, he's marrying her
yes.
soon, a woman 20 years his junior.
Yeah.
You know, what hope is there?
Well,
so what he is saying is, right, I got rid of Marina because she was too old and ugly by now.
Yeah.
And I got rid of the first one for Marina. So he's going to be like a rock star
yes.
and keep trading them in for a younger model.
Yes.
So Carrie will not be the last.
Yeah.
You mark my words.
Well, you may well be right. Anyway, just to get on with this, because this is fascinating and it's it has opened up some avenues of conversation about the relationship between men and women. If you feel a little queasy about Ms. Rigg's job, a form of wife procurement service, she says in her defence that more wealthy British men than ever are choosing to outsource, this is what she described as, outsource the management of their love lives, and that it has become a no-brainer for busy, rich males to hire someone to help to find them a partner. If you have a certain level of wealth, she said, then everything is about the personalised service. My clients have private chefs, fitness trainers, personal shoppers, wealth managers. Why wouldn't they go to an expert to handle their love life?
Well, what's wrong with going down the pub like everybody else?
Well, when you live in Berkeley Square in central London?
Well, there are pubs in West One.
Yeah, but you wouldn't go into a pub. These people don't go into pubs, do they?
So where do you meet people these days?
Well, you meet them at social events and all that, I would
so
think.
So I used to meet people at parties and at gigs and, you know, weekends, weddings.
Yep.
I think I met quite a lot of my boyfriends at weddings.
Really?
But
did
I don't get to go to weddings anymore because all our friends have married, divorced, remarried,
yeah, that's
whatever
right.
else.
Yeah.
So I don't go to weddings
Well, you'll be going to weddings when your children start getting married, don't you?
Oh, yeah, but then it'll be all people their age group, you know.
Well, no, there'll be in-laws like yourself. Right, she goes on to say, Ms. Rigg's clients are between 35 and 65 years old. Most are too high profile to go on dating apps.
Yeah, well, that makes sense.
Right?
Although was her name? Sharon Stone did in the States.
Yeah, she did,
yeah.
There was a
furore
about
that.
Yeah. Yeah, that was great.
And people wouldn't believe it was really her.
That's right. Others are simply humble billionaires.
Humble
billionaires. She describes them as humble billionaires.
Oxymoron alert.
Yeah, that's right. Many work in finance or are chief executives or heads of tech companies.
They're going to be quite boring guys then, aren't they?
Well, I don't know. There's a plastic surgeon and a large and very famous retailer. All would rather not do their own searching or filtering. The proliferation of dating apps.
Searching or filtering.
Yeah, or filtering, yeah.
That's a euphemism.
The proliferation of dating apps has normalised the act of people meeting through an intermediary, even if it is an electronic one. She says, it's not that my clients don't have time for a relationship. They do, if it's the right one. What they don't have time for is going through, you know, the long drawn out process of meeting, finding that they've met the wrong people. My clients say to me, let's just do this properly from the outset.
Okay, I mean, so what sets her apart from all these other... Do you remember Caroline Crowther? She was married to Phil Lynott.
Yes, I do.
She's the daughter of Leslie Crowther.
Yes.
And she had a very upmarket... She called it an introductions agency.
Oh, really?
Actually, yeah. Yeah. It was out in the country somewhere.
It was West Country. It was towards Bristol or Bath.
Yeah. It cost a lot of money to sign up.
Right.
But what sets this one apart? Does she only accept the money from the rich guys? And where does she get the women from?
I don't know the answer to any of those questions. But reading through that sounds to me like a lot of the people she's looking for might be mistresses for the rich and famous.
This is what I think,
rather than,
yeah,
you know,
so she's a woman. Yeah. They're prostitutes by another name, aren't
they?
I wouldn't
say that. Look. What,
escorts, then. It's an escort agency.
What people want to do in their lives and relationships with the same sex or opposite sex or whatever is up to the individual. And one man's escort is another man's companion.
That's true.
You know what I mean?
But when money changes hands, it becomes a transaction. And then there's something slightly business-like about it. And one person has the power and the other person defers to them.
I mean, women...
So it's an imbalanced relationship.
You know, wealthy women are not immune to hiring male company, are they? In fact, it's a very, very well-practiced, procedure in social terms going back centuries.
Yeah, it is. But if you boil it down, it's a business transaction. One is in charge, one is paying, and the other one is receiving or offering a service.
Yeah.
And therefore, that can't be a real relationship.
I tell you what.
There's no equality involved.
Did you watch recently the TV adaptation of the White House Farm murders, massacre?
No.
Called White House Farm.
No, I read about it, but
It was fantastic, absolutely fantastic, honestly. I worked on that case as a young reporter in Tollisunt Darcy, a very tiny community in Essex where if you were still on the case, you went in the pub, all the locals stopped talking, you know what I mean? Nobody would give you any directions to the farm and all that kind of stuff, you know? But the point of the story is, the villain at the centre of it all is Jeremy Bamber, and during the period between committing the massacre and being a free man until the police eventually cottoned on that, he was responsible. He went off on a holiday with his newfound wealth, which he'd inherited from his parents, took his mate with him and acted as a gigolo, spending a lot of time with older, rich women who were in the resorts they went to, you know, like Biarritz and places like that, you know what I mean?
Gross.
And it occurred to me, he's been in jail 35 years now. He must look back on that week as being quite different and quite better than the weeks he's had since then, every one of which he's spent in jail. Not that I have any sympathy for him. It was a shocking crime. Now, one last question before we go, Leslie Ann, and thank you for joining me again today.
Always my pleasure.
During the course of my rather varied newspaper career, I often got over to the House of Commons. As a very young reporter, I was actually deputy political editor of the Birmingham Evening Mail in London, you know, because there were only two of us. And I found it an absolutely fascinating world. I loved the corridors of power. I loved, dealing with these MPs and even, you know, lords of the realm in the bars and getting out onto the terrace in the summer and the interaction between them all. So it didn't surprise me when I saw a report recently. MPs drink three times as much as the rest of us. Have you been amongst that sort of drinking, socialising set yourself?
I have a little bit. I tell you, he's a friend of mine.
Yes.
He's done very well lately, given the tribulations of the recent past.
Yes.
Is Nigel Evans, MP.
Oh, yes. Yeah, he was Deputy Speaker.
Deputy Speaker now, yeah.
Wasn't he accused of an attack on a male?
Yeah, he was. And he was absolved.
Cleared, absolutely.
Because he didn't do it.
Yes.
But he's a very a jolly guy, let's say. And he does like convivial company.
Yeah.
And he does put him away. So, you know, I've had some very interesting evenings out with Nigel.
Yes.
It doesn't surprise me at all. I think it's a very stressful job.
Yeah.
I think, you know,
I think it's rather a cushy job, actually.
Do you?
Yeah.
Do you fancy yourself as an MP?
No, I don't think I could have done it because I can't be bothered to be responsible for that many people. You know what I mean? It just irritate me. Funny enough, they have lots of assistants. Very small point, right? An MP in one of the places where I live was a vice chairman of the Tory party before the election, has since become a junior minister. And he's also a mate because I know the pub he drinks in. And I don't go there to see him, but it's opposite his constituency office. And I use it, I don't know, once a week or something like that. And when I go in there, sometimes he's there, in the corner discreetly. But he's always with two or three assistants and they do the donkey work. So, for instance, somebody in the block I live in got wholly irritated when the bin men didn't turn up one week. We don't know why, they just missed it on the round or something like that.
You've always got bin things going on, haven't you?
Oh, honestly.
The bin sagas.
Yeah, it's the bane of my life. And
the
so,
bin of your life.
The bin of my life. Thank you very much indeed. So this irritated neighbour, fired off an email to the local MP and all that. And a reply comes back from him directly, but he had nothing to do with it. It's his assistants do it, And facts, they got it done. And I talked about it on the radio, saying what a great MP my local MP is. He even, deals with the non-appearance of the bin man and all this kind of stuff and all that. And
It's the minions.
Yeah, the minions.
Or in your case, the binions.
Yes, the binions, that's right, yeah. But the point is, that's the real toe rag end of the job. But being an MP is being part of one of the most exclusive clubs in the world. You get, it's no wonder they drink three times as much as the rest of us, according to this report.
Because they can afford it.
Well, the drinks are all subsidised. You and I are paying for their drinks.
Yes.
Politicians drink nearly three times as much as the rest of the population. A new study shows some 40% of MPs drink at least four times a week. Really? Well, yes, a Fleet Street, mate, where you drink 14 times a week. Four times a day, absolutely, yeah. compared with 15% of the public. And they typically consume greater quantities, with 20% having at least five drinks in an average session compared with 15% of those they represent.
So why are we subsidising their alcoholic intake?
Well, I think they've changed the rules now, but...
It doesn't seem fair, does it? They don't subsidise ours.
Until recently, the bars of the House of Commons were open as long as the House was sitting.
Yes.
Because you used to have all night sittings.
Yeah.
So you'd have about half a dozen MPs literally in the chamber debating, some ridiculous bill about the height of lamppost in Rochdale or something like that.
And the rest of them were all on the piss.
The piss all night, yeah, absolutely. And they're unable to, to function the next day. Now, I think that's changed a bit because the house closes at 10 o'clock.
So no wonder there's so much hanky-panky in the house.
Well, that's right. But I remember in the early days when I used to go there, I'm not joking, the sexism was absolutely overwhelming.
I thought you were going to say the sex, because there was quite a lot of sex in the house.
Oh, there's a lot of sex going on, yeah, but the sexism itself.
Do you remember the two fat ladies, the cooks?
Yes, driving around on motorbikes.
One that was called Rosemary.
Yes.
I think she's dead now, but she talked in her memoir about having sex behind the speaker's chair.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. I've heard about that phenomenon before.
If you looked at where the speaker's chair is, there's not an awful lot of room behind
there. No, there's not.
So it begs all the questions, given the girth of the lady in question.
I couldn't work that out myself. No, I went there once, I remember, as a very young man. It was I think it was called the end of term. It's the last day of the Commons before they break for the summer break. And you go out on the terrace and the Thames is there, boats coming past.
Oh, that is gorgeous along there.
Utterly beautiful. And this must be 40 years ago or 35 years ago. And I'm not joking. The way the MPs were touching up the waitresses and being so offhand and flirtatious.
Oh, well, they wouldn't get away with it now.
No, they wouldn't. To any woman who came through, some researcher would come and bring some papers and he'd squeeze her bum, and say, well done, darling, or pat her on the thigh or something like that, or pull her onto his knee. It was outrageous.
Horrible.
It was outrageous.
Oh, I would have slapped him.
Well, I don't know if you would in those days, you see.
Yeah,
because
in those days, not. But me, as I am now, they wouldn't stand a chance, mate. I tell you.
The greatest bloke I ever met in the Commons was Jerry Fitt. I'd done time in Ireland. Well, Jerry Fitt was very famous. He went on to become a Lord. So after he left the Commons, he went to the Lords. We always came back to the same bars. But Jerry Fitt would drink whiskey all night. He was an incredibly brave man. He was an Irish politician who stood up against the extremists on both sides in the divide. And people would break into his house with guns and threaten to shoot him and kill his family and all that. Incredibly brave man. But my, what a drinker and what a raconteur. And if we had more people like him, the country would be a better place. So there we go, folks. That's it for today. So thank you very much indeed again, Leslie Ann, for being here. Let's remind people about our live show. It's not too far away now.
Oh, on Palm Sunday.
Palm Sunday.
In the afternoon.
That's right.
At the Hen and Chickens in Islington.
That's right, 3
o'clock. Come on down. Come and have a bit of lunch, a Sunday lunch.
Yeah.
And we'll be in the bar afterwards.
We certainly will.
Having a drink.
Find yourself somewhere to
have a chat.
Have a bit of nosh in Islington. Then come along to the Hen and Chickens. What's Leslie Ann and I on stage. And as you quite rightly say, a few sherbets,
never
all around when we finish the show.
We can outdo some politicians that afternoon.
We can do. It's a smashing arena. And if people want to get hold of you, Leslie Ann, where do they go?
Oh, on Twitter, LAJ, at LAJ Writer.
That's right. And for me, it's at Mike Parry 8. How's the Lennon book coming along?
Yeah, it's done. It's finished.
Really?
On to the next thing.
Well, is the manuscript gone?
Gone to the publisher.
Wow.
So
you've got a big pile of dosh, have you, coming the other way?
No, we'll have to wait and see how it does. It's not publishing until the 17th of September.
Okay, well, we're all very pleased for you.
Thank you.
I look forward to... I think you sent me a note the other night. You must have had a few drinks and said, Porky, you're getting the first Lennon book. Is that right?
No, that's absolutely true. You will. Because you're such a big John Lennon fan.
Well, that's so kind
of you.
So
the very first copy that drops on my front doormat will be yours.
Wow, well, that's fantastic. Thank you very much indeed. I will hold you to that, and then maybe in my dotage, in my old age, I'll have to flog it to raise a few quid for a few more sherbets. Okay, folks, thank you very much indeed for being with us today, and we'll be back very soon. No, I'm not disrespectful to women at all. You know, I have huge admiration for women's intelligence and their minds and their ability, and they do very well in business.
The most important thing about them is the way they look.
Well, it is to me, because...
So once they get over, 40, you discard them and get another one?
No, of course not.
That's what rock stars do.
No.
That is what rock stars do.
I'm only being very honest about the way that I see my interaction with the opposite sex.
So you're never going to get a wife, are you?
Sorry?
You're never going to get a wife.
Well, I've given up on the, for years I used to, on the radio, tell people about the search for the first Mrs. Parry, the FMP, first
You've
Mrs.
given
Parry.
Up on that now?
I've given up on that now because it would now be impractical.
Why is that then?
Well, because there's other things to do. He got changed and she said, "Where are you going, Harry?" And he said, "I'm going to see my mistress, of course."
He was in a bit of an Harry, wasn't he?
He was, and he wasn't even, trying to hide it, and that was it.
But it's disgraceful behaviour. There's no equality in a relationship like that.
Yeah.
That is not about love and affection.
Does it have to be about love and affection?
Isn't it an arrangement? Otherwise, it's a horrible arranged marriage, and the wife is there to be a trophy to make him look good, to produce his children, to give him a certain respectable dimension to his life, to make him look like something he isn't really.
For any woman as good looking as my niece to be with a guy as ugly as me, she'd have to be paid to do it.
She must be in it for the money.
Yeah.